Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
Including in Tuca, trying to smash it into one
and
word.
And inform you in the afternoon.
Tuca puked on his pad.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Up the middle. Snagged by Brock Holt. In time at first base, and the Red Sox win this one. Going away tonight, and Pierce was just brilliant with three home runs. The Red Sox win it by a final of 15-7.
Okay, big win for the Sox last night. Take us right into Agenda Free Friday, which is brought to you by Planet Fitness. The world judges, they don't. PlanetFitness.com. Again, Paul Perillo is here alongside filling in. Mike Felger's been out all week, so I've been in the A-hole chair. Perillo's joining us today. Matt McCarthy here to give us headlines. You guys have anything to add, or should we just get right back to the callers?
I notice you don't include me in any of the Planet Fitness reads.
By design, Paul. Are you taking a good look in the mirror, pal?
Yeah.
Maybe it should tell you something, huh?
What are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I'll take that as an opportunity to get right back to the phones. Guys in Newton, Guy, what do you got?
Yeah, I just got a couple points. One to that previous caller about what a mess the Yankees are. What about when the bases were loaded and we got Martinez up? He hits that ground at the first base and the pitcher's just standing on the mound. Doesn't even cover. It's not like Martinez is fleet of foot or anything. But more to my point about the bullpen, I was at the game on Monday night and the whole game, and it was a great game, you know, walking off in 13 innings, but every pitcher they put in, we're looking at each other like, oh, geez, you know, this isn't going to get any better. This is going to be a disaster. And then I'm going to the game tonight, and after a game like yesterday, there's no chance we're going to come back, put up those runs. I mean, the other caller said something about, you know, we gave up seven. There's no chance that it's going to be a good one tonight. I mean, I'm a big Sox fan, but I got zero faith looking forward.
Yeah, so, Guy, I'll tell you, I believe it or not, I don't read into it that way. I don't look at it and say, all of a sudden, no chance tonight. Yankees win that game. Severino's been dreadful of late.
Yeah, 20 runs in his last 19 and a third.
Yeah, his last four games, his ERA is almost 9. Okay, and this is the ace of the Yankees. So, Matt McCarthy, you touched on this earlier, but I think it's a good point. I mean, if you step out of your Red Sox underwear for a moment and you sort of look at it from 10,000 feet, it's a big game for the Yankees tonight.
It's a huge game for the Yankees tonight.
They're 6.5 out. They're 4 out in the loss column. Their heads are spinning. Again, the last few days, think of what's happened to this team in 2 weeks. All the crap that's gone wrong. Losses to Baltimore, for crying out loud. In there, Sonny Gray craps his pants. The bullpen disaster last night by Holder. You know, they're getting spanked all over the place, and now their ace is going in the mound, and he hasn't pitching well.
You acquire Hap, and then you lose him. I mean, there's a lot of crap going on.
Absolutely. And then, you know, you have a situation last night where you think, okay, Chris Sale's supposed to pitch the game. We dodge a bullet. Here comes Brian Johnson. And your guys give up 15. So, like, I do. I think this is a big night for the Yankees.
If the Yankees don't win tonight, Tony, look at the rest of the series. They've got this kid coming up from AAA tomorrow. He's going to make his Major League debut against Eovaldi, a right-handed pitcher. We know the Yankees don't hit righties as well as they hit lefties. And then on Sunday...
Okay, let's not go turn Eovaldi into Christy Mathewson yet.
He's not that.
But, and Sunday night is David Price.
Okay, but Masahiro Tanaka goes for the Yankees, and he's like their version of Price. They have no idea what they're going to get from that guy on a
weekly basis. Who do
you
like in that matchup?
Give me Tanaka.
Okay. I mean, so I'd tell you the same thing. This is a big one. They get Severino going tonight. I mean, if the Yankees are going to get back in the series and get back in the division, it starts tonight. If it doesn't, the Red Sox are going to strangle them this weekend. Kevin's in Connecticut. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hey, Paul, one thing Tony ought to remember when he's reading those promos is Planet Fitness is a judgment-free zone. So
exactly.
One thing to keep in mind.
Exactly.
But, hey, one thought about Brady's press conference. If you think back to the Deflategate press conference he had, he kind of took a lot of heat for coming out passive and not denying the accusation more adamantly. So maybe on the Edelman comments or the Guerrero comments, this was his way of sort of shutting it down and nipping it in the bud. Thanks, guys.
But so Kevin, he didn't deny it. That's our point. I think he had a chance to come out and strongly deny it and did nothing.
Yeah, and so, but it is a fair point. He was more cooperative, and to me, the way I would say it is that he was more cooperative in Deflategate. And when he spoke, remember, are you a cheater? I don't believe so.
Right.
And so the fact that he was kind of cooperative and kind of went along with it, we all sort of looked at it and said, you don't believe so. What the hell does that mean? Okay, like, you know, it led you to wonder, what's Brady getting at? So there's some contrast there, Paul. There's some. But I do think there was a chance, really, for him to say about Alex Guerrero, hey, guys, look, I know people are making some pretty big leaps here. And I'm telling you, I don't have any concerns.
That's okay? It. That's all he would have had to say.
So he just, the way he reacted, I just thought it was a really bad look. It was a really poor reflection on Brady. Wally's in Fall River. Wally, what do you got?
Yeah, what's up, Tony? You know, we followed these guys for a long time. This is a special season. These guys are a band of brothers. But you look at Brian Cashman's comments on how the Red Sox are lucky. They can only beat the bad teams. They can't beat us. I mean, you look at Cleveland last year. They won 22 in a row. How many were those against bad teams? The same with the Dodgers. They won like 45 out of 50. But you have to give Dombrowski credit. I mean, he got Kinsler for practically nothing. He got Steve Pearce. But as far as the Yankees go, I mean, they're not bulletproof. Their rotation isn't Drysdale, Austin, and Koufax. These guys can't be beaten. But like I said, these are big games for the Yankees. They can't fall 7.5, 8.5
hey,
games.
Hey, Wally. Wally, what's the Red Sox rotation after Sale?
Well, I realize that, but still, we seem to be, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the chemistry, but I still rather have our rotation than the Yankees.
Okay, so look, maybe you would. I'm just telling you that I don't think your rotations are really all that different. I don't. They have Severino, you have Sale. What happens after that for either team? You're telling me David Price all of a sudden is some great answer? He can't beat this team to save his life. Since he put on a Red Sox uniform, his ERA is over 8. At Yankee Stadium, it's over 10. In Boston, it's over 6. You want a stat, Paul? I'll give you a stat. 47 innings, David Price. No? 47 innings he's pitched against the Yankees since he's been with the Red Sox. How many hits do you think he's given up?
56.
74.
74.
74
that's
hits.
That's a lot of hits.
Okay, 74. 47 innings, 74 hits.
74 hits, just hits.
Okay, so
that's
so
not
like
an account walks.
No,
what's his whip like? 3?
Oh God, who knows? I mean, he's gotten his brains beat in by this team.
Wow, 74. Yeah.
So the idea that I love this one all the time when people talk about the Yankees. Well, their rotation stinks. What's yours? After Sale, really? Who do you have faith in? Porcello in the regular season, maybe in the playoffs. You really want to send Porcello against a good team?
Yeah, it's hard to be a Red Sox fan and feel great about Porcello or Price in a playoff game.
I mean, how could
I mean,
you?
It's just, I mean, I'm not trying to be playing the talk radio side of things. It's just hard as a Red Sox fan to know that you're going to get a good start from those guys.
Yeah, you don't have to apologize, Paul. It's an honest, realistic look.
Now, Sale did not pitch well last year, but I'm willing to look at him and say, It's a
sure.
One-off. Even Porcello is kind of a one-off. I mean, he doesn't have a history that Price has. Price, I'm sorry, you can't ignore that there's a lot of different games in a lot of different situations. More or less, he hasn't come through in any of them.
Yeah, I'm more down on Porcello than you are. You should look up his postseason history sometime.
Oh, I'm not high on. I don't think Porcello's that good. I don't think it has to be a playoff game. I think, what's his ERA right now? It's over 4, right?
It's 4.03.
That's what he is to me. He's a 4 ERA pitcher.
But here's the thing.
Who had one year that he was out of his mind.
And then pitched in the playoffs and gets shelled.
Right.
But here's the thing. The Red Sox rotation, at least for the regular season, it's better than what the Yankees have. I mean, take postseason out. That's the difference right there. The Red Sox have more serviceable regular season pitchers than the Yankees do. That's the difference. Tanaka and Sabathia, though, they're better options than what you have in the postseason because your guys have never done that. That is the difference. Red Sox better built for the regular season. Yankees, at least in their starting rotation, better built for the postseason.
So I just, to me, the one thing I said about this weekend was that the Red Sox could put a stranglehold on the division. It's the only thing, it's the only definitive, you know, prediction I've had about this weekend, that if the Red Sox take 3 out of 4, they will put a stranglehold on the division and that it effectively will be over. Mike's in a car. Mike, what do you got?
Yeah, I think, well, first, that stat you gave about Price was just cringeworthy. But the big thing was who has more to lose going into this weekend, Red Sox or Yankees? And certainly after watching last night, it's definitely the Yankees.
Absolutely.
They have a chance to potentially go down as many as 10 in the East, play catch up, and I mean, you said it before, their manager, he looks like a deer in headlights. And I'm not, I wasn't the biggest fan of them bringing in Alex Cora, but the biggest thing he's done is he's said everything right. He sounds like he knows what he's doing, whereas their manager doesn't sound like he knows anything.
Yeah, well, it's a mismatch right now. Mm-hmm. You're right.
I mean, and the irony is that they, you know, as Chris Gasper said when he was here, Chris Gasper of the Globe, he said, why did they hire this guy? Did they talk to the media? Like, because Aaron Boone could talk to the media and make nice? And you know what I think? I think Cora's done a better job with the media than Aaron Boone has.
Reed.
If you listen to Cora and they ask him about some of the mistakes the Red Sox make, he's not making excuses for them. He's talking about, no, we got to do better than that. If Rafael Devers made a mistake on the bases last week where he took off on a ball to center field because he forgot how many outs there were, and he also made a bad play in the prior inning in the field where he was slow getting rid of the ball and allowed a runner to reach base. And you know what Cora said when asked about it afterward? He said it was a bad read. And you know, the play before, when you add it all up, we ended up having to bring Kimbrel into the game, and there was a ripple effect there. And, you know, for what we're trying to do, we can't have that stuff happen. So, Cora, now, it's not throwing your player under the bus.
No. Mm-hmm.
That's looking at your player and saying, look, he's young, but we got to do better than that. We're not in this to beat the Baltimore Orioles in the month of July. We're in this to win a championship. And so, what are we doing here? We can't have that. Even the play last night, I loved his comment on Bradley's play.
Perfect.
I loved his comment on Bradley's play when Bradley got hung up between third and home. And so I think Jimmy Stewart, our producer, is pulling it up right now. But here's what he said about Bradley's play on the bases.
Well, he got caught in no man's land there, and he made a decision. They threw behind him, and he took off. So he went from a bad base running play to a great slide and brought energy to the stadium, to the dugout. He's such a good athlete that he reacted to it, and he made a decision, and he worked for us.
So you know what the translation is there? He's a good athlete, so he got away with it. But he had his head up his butt. He made a bad base running play. And again, notice how he says he went from a bad base running play to a great slide. He didn't say great play. He said great slide. So he got himself out of jail, is what effectively what Cora is saying. He's not praising Jackie Bradley for making an asshat play on the bases, which is what it was. It was a bad play in the bases, and the other thing is, they threw behind him, he said. Mm-hmm. So he took off. Like, hey, if the Yankees
screwed it up,
right,
yeah,
if he
took advantage of it.
Exactly. If the Yankees screw it up, then fine, he escaped. But they made a mistake. And I come back to the same thing, we talked about this at the beginning of the show. When I look at that play, I'm sorry. In the big leagues, you get a guy in a rundown, you get him out. Kids escape in Little League and in Babe Ruth and whatever else. Kids escape because teenagers...
They're faster, they're more athletic. It should never happen in the major leagues.
Because kids can't execute that play. A big leaguer? Come on, you get a guy in a rundown, you nail that guy. Absolutely nail him. We'll be back with more of your calls.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Tom turns 41 today. I'm sure you know, you talked about it briefly the other day. Looking back, could you ever have imagined this kind of longevity from him playing so well at 41 back when you were starting to get some good success with him in the early 2000s?
Yeah, I mean, look, in 2003, I was worried about 2003. In 2006, I was worried about 2006. Right now, I'm not thinking about 2028 or whatever year it is. So it's not really the way I look at it. So we'll take what we have and, you know, look at, you know, a year, next year, you know, that kind of window. I mean, think about a player, you know, where some player on our team is going to be 10 years from now. It's not really part of my thought process, to be honest with you. Not at this time. We can look back, but at this time, I'm not thinking about, you know, getting a player ready for the 2029 season. I mean, just not thinking about that.
Sometime.
I mean, come on, Bill. Come on. You know what the question was. The question was about Tom Brady's longevity. I don't know, maybe Belichick is still butthurt over the fact that Brady's here, and ultimately he thwarted the Jimmy Garoppolo plan, and he, you know, fended him off. Maybe that's what it's about. But that question, is, boy, you know, could you have imagined Brady being here at this point? And the whole thing is designed to say, hey, look, Tom's had a great career, right? That was what the question was about, and Bill knew it. Right. So what did he do? He twisted it around to say, oh, you mean like right now I'll be looking at 2029? I mean, come on. You know what the question was about. And so naturally, someone did follow it up and tried to get a more direct answer from Brady on the fact that today was Brady's 40, or from Belichick, rather, about Brady and the fact that today was his 41st birthday, which was the opportunity, certainly, for everyone to ask it. Bill just didn't want to play ball. Here's the follow-up.
Do you look at him like today and say, man, I can't believe it's still going on this good?
Well, I said, no, he's had a tremendous career. Yeah, absolutely. He's had a spectacular career. And he still plays it on very high level. Yeah.
I mean, that was it. So he goes on. How long did he go on to the first one? A minute? Like, he goes on for a minute on the first one talking about 2029. Then someone says, well, you know, can you at all sort of celebrate the fact that he's still going? Oh, yeah, I've said it before. It's just needless dinkishness, if that's what you want to call it. It's really needless, you know? And so it does make you wonder, like, what's the big deal about throwing a bone to Brady today?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how much, like, the birthday stuff is like. I mean, really, this is...
Well, it's irritating the crap out of me, Paul.
Right, so can you imagine what it must be like for the team, like, to have to deal with it? And I'm not talking, like, that it's Tom's fault in any way. I don't mean it to sound like that, because that's not the case. But there's just a lot of stuff going on, and it's getting more and more every year around this day. And, you know, it's probably not the best thing for the coach, right?
But how many times...
You know, he's probably annoyed... He's probably not in a great place right now with the quarterback. I mean, they're dealing with whatever the stuff that they're trying to fight through. And I got to be talking about, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, the guy's great. I think we all know he's great. Do I have to tell you every other press conference that I think he's great? You know, I think he understands. He's probably just a little tired.
Yeah, I also think on some level it hits a nerve because he says, well, yeah, if I had my way, I'd still have Garoppolo here, but what do you want me to do?
You just love to get back to that.
I do. Well, it's kind of a big story, Paul.
Bill just wanted his cake.
Yeah.
Celebration.
There you go.
I got my cake today.
So yeah, where's mine?
My buddy Alan is in Florida. What do you got, Alan?
Well, first of all, Maz, you know, you made it say, like, you were talking about the rotations. Oh, well, Sale and Severino. I don't want to go over it. We all know he's had four rotten outings. You're talking about against the best pitcher in baseball right now. So that's not a wash, exactly. And then you had somebody else.
It kind of is, actually.
Well, no, it isn't.
And Sale's on the DL. No, it is kind of a wash.
No, it isn't a wash.
You're getting the same amount from both guys right now.
Any person in America would know that that's not a wash. Severino and Sale is a wash.
I mean, it is pretty much a wash. They've both been great pitchers all season.
No, it's not a wash at all. No, you have to be a moron to say that,
right.
Honestly.
I don't like this guy. I don't like the way he treats you, Tony.
Okay,
I'm defending you today. Only I can treat you like that.
I kind of like Alan. Go ahead.
Okay.
All right. Number two, I mean, to say, and, you know, I'm not a Price fan, but to say that in the playoffs, Sabathia, who's a washed-up, has-been, whatever, who probably won't even pitch in the playoffs, he's so bad, and Tanaka are better in the playoffs than Porcello and even Price.
Now he's picking on you, Matt. Uh-huh. Your turn.
Yeah, okay, so why would you trust David Price in the playoffs over guys who have done it over and over and over again? Sabathia did it last year for them. Tanaka did it last year for them. What did David Price do for you last year, Alan?
Sabathia can't even pitch five innings anymore.
Do the Yankees need five innings? Do they need five innings in the playoffs?
That's what you said about him last year, and he was great in the playoffs, but you said the same thing last year because I remember your calls. They're very annoying.
Alan, let me just ask you one quick question. Do you know what Tanaka's career postseason ERA is?
Yeah, I know, but that is... He's getting older. You know what is? How is he doing this year? All of a sudden, he's going to be magically turn like this team is not set for the playoffs. I mean, this team right now, it's just like, let me hear one name of anybody on the panel. They wanted to get a relief pitcher. Yeah, I wanted one too. Let's hear one name. I named Iglesias. They couldn't get him. They didn't have enough to get him. He was open, but he would have been good. What would you want? Oh, imagine if Osuna came to Boston. What would have happened?
I would have taken Familia, given that Oakland gave up their 19th-ranked prospect for him. I think you could have gotten him.
Well, you might have been able to get him, but maybe the Mets. Yeah,
Alan, look, I'm going to let you go, all right? I appreciate the calls. I'm going to let you go.
I don't.
You said, what, Tanaka all of a sudden is going to magically turn it around? Do you know that in two of his final four starts last year, he allowed 7 runs and 8 runs?
Then he got to the playoffs, and he was lights out. Okay, so last year, he did. He completely turned it around on a dime as soon as the playoffs started. So unlike you, I actually do think that come playoff time, certain guys focus better, they amp it up, and they pitch better. The Red Sox guys go the other way. So I don't think it's wrong to look at the Yankees and say their rotation is every bit as good as yours come playoff time. In fact, it might be better. Mark's in Medford.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Last night in the fourth inning, Nunes got up to bat. His count was 1-2. He went to he bunted with two strikes and fouled it off. Either the telecast had it wrong, or everybody in the park missed that he had two strikes and he tried to bunt, and he wasn't called out.
No, so well, Mark, I don't.
The telecast had it wrong.
Yeah, I don't remember that. I don't remember it. And look, in that fourth inning, I mean, everything else is going the Red Sox way, so I suppose it's completely conceivable that someone missed a count. But I'm telling you, I think the telecast probably
the graphic
had it wrong.
Must have had it wrong. I mean, full disclosure, I was not watching the game live, but I find it impossible that a guy bunted with two strikes and wasn't called out, and it hasn't been a story today.
Yeah, no.
That would be a story right now if they made a mistake like that.
I don't think that happened. Ty's in Dorchester. Go ahead, Ty, quickly.
Yeah, so how you doing, man? So good. I just want to say, man, the Red Sox win this series against the Yankees, is that going to change your perspective? And I compare JBJ to Marcus Smart. A bum on offense, but good on defense. Thanks for my call.
Okay, so Ty, you're not the first one to make that comparison. Other people have done it, and it's not a horrible one. I mean, I actually think Smart's a more valuable defender than Jackie Bradley is.
He's a far more valuable player than Jackie Bradley is.
I mean, I think so. I think
the things
too, Paul.
That Smart does for the Celtics are far more valuable to winning than making a diving catch.
I mean, I feel the same way.
Well, you know, I mean, and I'm not saying that he's not a good defensive center fielder. He is. He's an excellent defensive player. I'm not pulling the Adam Jones card here. It's okay. I'm not saying that. He's an excellent defensive center fielder. The value of that is not anywhere near the value of the things that meant Marcus Smart to me. You know, drawing charges and, you know, the kinds of stuff that he does at the key time of the game. You know, do you want Jackie Bradley doing anything at a key time of the game?
Nope.
I mean, I think the only time that you're ever going to live with Marcus Smart doing anything offensively is kind of when the game's on the line. It seems to be the only time he ever does anything of value offensively.
1-10 in game 7.
Look,
as was the rest of the team.
I mean, I get the, you know, it's a loose comparison, but I get it. Guys who are better on defense and offense and really are inept offensively. So it's
And Marcus Smart is inept offensively. I'm not, you know, sugarcoating that.
But, I'm not a Bradley guy. To answer Ty's question, if the Red Sox take 3 out of 4 this weekend, I said this last night, the division's effectively over. They will have a stranglehold on the division. You're talking about a team that's played 700 baseball all year long for, what will it be at that stage, 108 games or something more? Something closer to 111?
Yankees would have 52 games after this series.
The Red Sox would have 49,
so
though.
Red Sox would have something like
that. So
that
puts them at 113. So they'll play 700 baseball for 113 games, and they're going to blow a 7.5-game lead?
No.
No shot. Because, again, the Yankees still have 6 with them head-to-head, but 3 of them are on the final weekend of the season. So those 3 games might never mean anything.
Right.
So, to me, if the Red Sox take 3 out of 4, I think that effectively they will have a stranglehold on the American League East. Does that mean they'll win in October? Nope. So let's not jump too far ahead. But the division will be theirs.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. Sometimes they're hot on the topic.
Junta.
Magenta?
Junta.
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 Sometimes you have to wonder if there's a gas leak in the building.
Woohoo! Whoop-de-doo!
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
So last night, we like to do this from time to time on this show. Last night's television ratings, the Red Sox drew their highest number of the season. That should not surprise you. Friday night, Yankees, beginning of August, nothing else going on. So you're going to get a big audience for that. And they drew double digits last night, the Red Sox did. The NFL Hall of Fame game drew a 2.0, I think, or so in the Boston area. And I mentioned this only because not many people watched it.
Too many people watched it. 2.0.
Well, so that's true. Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, if you compare it to, for example, hockey games or something, the hockey playoffs in some cases, the NFL Hall of Fame game does a bigger number than some NHL playoff games. We've had that discussion before. But needless to say, I saw a story on Deadspin today about the new helmet rule in the NFL that you cannot lead with your helmet. And so I went back and watched a little bit of the first quarter of that game, and there was one sequence. And remember, they changed the catch rule too, Paul. So I'd love to get your take on this. There were two consecutive plays. It might have been two out of three. On the first one was a deflected pass off of Brett Perryman's hands, a wide receiver with the Ravens, was intercepted by a guy on the Bears who sort of was moving the ball in his hands a little bit and then hit the ground and the ball moved. And they did not reverse it. So total opposite of what we're used to now from the last couple of years, right? That the ground, you don't have to quote unquote survive the ground anymore.
Right.
So that's a change. And this helmet rule, now I know it's the preseason. They're going to call it more often to try to get people into the habit of understanding and players into the habit of understanding what's coming. But this helmet rule is going to be a disaster.
Yeah, I agree.
There was one play. It was a little swing pass to Benny Cunningham, the running back, and a linebacker for the Ravens who, I'm going to butcher this, Patrick Onwosor, number 48, inside linebacker, ran over late in the play and, to me, you know, went in to add to the tackle with his shoulder. But when you put your shoulder down, your head's also going to go down. And they gave him 15 yards. Now, to me, it wasn't a late hit. I would describe it as an absolutely, completely ordinary play in the NFL. And he got 15 yards. Have you sensed at all that Belichick thinks this is going to be a complete,
I have,
you know, poop show?
Yeah, I mean, he's been sort of reluctant to talk about it a little bit. And I know we were, I think he mentioned today, I think earlier in the week, they met with the officials. And that's every year they go around all the training camps. And first they meet with the teams. They show the teams a presentation. They address all the new rules, the emphasis, and you know, they basically have a discussion of, as to what is going to be going on, and then they do it for the media. The, you know, basically the same kind of presentation. They, Belichick said today that they did meet earlier in the week with Cleet, which I assume is Blakeman. I don't think there are a lot of Cleet out there officiating NFL games. But we did not get the meeting. Originally, it was on our schedule that we were going to do it, I think, on Monday, and then it was rescheduled, or I'm not sure if we're going to do it at all at this point. And I know that there's been some other places where there's been so much confusion as to the way the officials are answering the questions from the players and the media that I think that they're pulling back on this to try to figure out and still trying to clarify the language and what exactly is an infraction. The only thing I can hope is that I see this ending one of two ways, and neither one of them is good. The first one, remember a couple of years ago with all the defensive holding and illegal contact, there were thousands in the preseason. I mean, we couldn't even get through. I mean, I know as much as you guys watch the preseason games for Paul Perillo and Andy Hart, and I know you do. we couldn't even watch the, we couldn't even get through them. We were like, this is so tedious. There's a flag on every play. But thankfully, by the time the regular season rolled around, it had sort of worked itself out. The flags weren't as prevalent, and it kind of fixed itself. That could happen with this rule. Maybe they're going to overemphasize it in the preseason, and just to make everybody conscious of, pick your head up. Don't lead with your helmet, right? And then when the regular season comes around, it's not going to get called as strictly as it has been. Or they're just going to have to do away with it. Because I don't see how you can play NFL games if you're – what you're describing, I didn't see the game last night, but you're not the only person that has mentioned that play to me. Run-of-the-mill plays can't be drawing 15-yard penalties. And I heard Lewis Riddick on ESPN talking about this could be an absolutely historic offensive season because there's no way to play defense right now if you're going to call it like that.
I just don't know how you can go in to make a tackle with your shoulder without putting your head in there. How are you going to pull that one off? Like, I'm telling you, so I use the NFL Game Pass, which the app of which I love, by the way, because you can go back and watch any part of any game. And in this first quarter, I'm telling you, if you get a chance and you have the app or, you know, or you recorded the game, not that you would, but go take a look at it. I'm sure they're showing highlights in places. It's going to be a freaking disaster. Mark my words. Butchie's in Brockton. Butchie, go.
Hey, you know, Tom Brady's got at least another 5 years. The best thing we ever did was dump Garoppolo. The kid sucks. Mark my words. And the Sox are not only going to crush it this year, they're going to win the World Series. And their bullpen is twice the bullpen of the New York Yankees.
Okay, so all right, good job, Butchie. Looks like you started the weekend early. It was fabulous. James is New Hampshire. James, what do you got, pal?
Hey, man, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, so listen, bro, so when it comes to Cora, I kind of want to talk to him for a minute. I didn't know what to expect when he came on, but his style of baseball, I don't know if it's him, but I'm assuming it's him because he's the head coach. That fourth inning was something I haven't seen in a long time. I called a couple weeks ago when Mookie hit his home run and Sale was all excited. I mean, I really like this recipe. I'm just curious in your opinion if this is something that we can go ahead and take on into the playoffs, because I as a fan, I love it. I think the opposing teams are a little fearful of it. I just don't know if that's going to take us through or not, because I think conservative baseball these days doesn't work.
Okay. Yeah. So, James, look, I think when you say this style of baseball, like, I don't think Cora has reinvented the wheel, but I'll tell you what they are good at. And this struck me during the game last night, too. Cora made a comment about how Ron Renicki is as good at picking up the intricacies or tells in a pickoff move as any guy's ever seen. And the Red Sox have now done this on more than one occasion. Last year, they were running on the first move. Like, they knew when a throw was coming and knew when it wasn't. And so they abused Sabathia, and then they abused Holder. And they did it earlier in the year, too, in a game against the Orioles, I think it was, where they just took off. And I wish for the life of me I could remember who was on the mound for Baltimore.
I think it was Gosman. I think you were right about that.
Either that or Chris Tillman. Or it was somebody
pitch this year?
It was somebody like that who they just took off on it, and nobody had run on him at that stage of the year. And the Red Sox were abusing him. Now, to me, the ultimate takeaway is that, boy, the Red Sox are an athletic team. They have power and athleticism. They really are. They're a good blend of it. And you go right around the diamond, and Swihart's now on the DL. But between Swihart at catcher, Ian Kinsler, the upgrade at second. Devers was off the field last night, so he had Nunez at third. Bogarts didn't play, but Holt was at short, and Holt's, you know, reasonably athletic.
Mm-hmm.
And the outfield is entirely athletic. I mean, really, they can hit doubles, they can hit triples, they can steal bases. They're number one in the majors in steal percentage. So in that fourth inning, there was a lot to like. Really, there was an absolute ton to like in that fourth inning last night. Jake's in Rhode Island. Jake, go ahead.
Hey, yeah. Have any of you guys read, like, Urban Meyer's apology or whatever it was that came out, like, an hour ago?
I did not read it, Jake. No. Why?
Well, let me tell you. He basically comes out and says in it that, oh, no, I actually did know that my assistant coach here was beating his wife, but I reported to the proper authorities and nothing happened. And when I was asked about it, you know, it's pressure, so I misspoke about it, and it just... This whole case is driving me mad because I'm not a fan of the NCAA by any standard. So just I kind of relish in seeing all the hypocrisy and all this stuff kind of come to head. And God, I just hope this guy gets what's coming to him.
Yeah, so look, it's hard to be a fan of the NCAA. It's hard to be a fan of any college coach, really. I mean, a large majority of them are dirty on some level. And so I haven't followed the story that closely. I have followed it loosely. And I'll just say I'm not the least bit surprised. Not the least bit surprised at all. Nick's in Florida. Nick, what do you got?
Hi, guys. Casey Deitch, Paul. How you doing?
Hey, Nick. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Listen, Tony, just let me get it in. I love you guys. I watch every day. I don't call in, but I just got a shout out. You know, my man Bruce Beasley and my man Mike Thomas. And I'm telling you, the best thing you and Michael ever did was to bring in Jim Murray. Jim Murray is also my man.
Okay, appreciate that, Nick. Did you call the sports thought or no?
No, here we go.
Got to make it fast,
all right,
Nick. Go.
All right, here we go now. The Red Sox, I want to talk about Belichick, but the Red Sox are going all the way, and I want Patriots Nation on record to know you go against me, you're going against the man. Belichick deserves to be respected. Tom Brady is a girl with a skirt. I'm saying it publicly. Leave Belichick alone.
Okay, Nick, appreciate the call. We couldn't get into the weekend without that one. We needed that call to send us off into Saturday.
Really contributed.
Nick is special.
We are about to enter our longest commercial-free segment here on 98.5, the Sports Hub. When we come back, final word, and then we'll go right into the baseball reporters. That's next.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And the final word is brought to you by Town Fair Tire for the guaranteed lowest price on tires. Go to Town Fair Tire because nobody beats Town Fair Tire.
Nobody.
Nobody. All right, so guys, we have a best of edition, or two editions, of Mad Mike and Squeaky Maz today.
Oh, beauty.
On this day in 2014, Mike got just a little bit upset about the Bruins. That's never happened before.
8 years, $72 million, $9 million cap hit. Bruins have Zdeno Chara for under $7 million a year. Am I going to hear from all these Bruins writers, hashtag Advantage Shirelli this week? Is anyone going to be lining up to pat Peter Shirelli on the back again? Oh, what a great deal Shirelli got. Look.
Those idiots in Chicago paying Jonathan Toews $10.5 million. Those idiots in Montreal, they pay P.K. Subban $9 million a year. He doesn't even kill penalties. We got Char for less than $7.
Are these people made of straw?
Who'd you rather have? P.K. Subban on his contract right now or Zdeno Chara on his?
Well, to me, that's easy. Subban's 25.
Per now.
Yeah.
Ask these Bruins rump swaps. No, P.K. doesn't even kill penalties.
Mike, who is saying that?
These Bruins writers don't think Pernell Carl's a good player. Now that's a strong one. They think that he's not hard to play against, and that Chara is hard to play against. At the end of the day, what Chara does is more valuable than what P.K. Subban does, and at the end of the day, you'd rather have Zdeno Chara than P.K. Subban. I asked my buddy DJ this last night. It's not even close. Chara, what's wrong with you people?
What do you mean, you people?
You have to score, too. You have to score. What is wrong with a defenseman that can score? And by the way, I think that Subban is getting better defensively. He's getting better as an all-around player. But offensively, he's a freaking weapon. Pay that man. He deserves to get paid.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
These people don't think Pernell Carl's a good player.
Are these people made of straw? A legitimate question there, right? Given how we operate occasionally on this show.
I ended up being right. Yeah. You wouldn't want Subban at $9 million?
I'd take P.K. Subban in a minute. I love that guy.
Bargain.
Absolutely.
Absolute bargain.
Okay, what else we got?
We also talked some Deflategate today. Joy, right? Yeah. Back in 2015, we were also talking about that, you know, in case you forgot.
Yeah.
Jay in Andover, waiting patiently. Thanks for hanging on, Jay. What do you got?
You guys have basically had the Patriots convicted since the first day of this. Okay, based on what? Mortensen's tweet.
Hey, Jay.
Go to your Google machine and Google New York Times.
That's the point. Now,
Jay, you're asking a question. I'm giving you an answer. Go to your Google machine. What do I base it on? Anyone out there, Google it. New York Times in cat and mouse game Patriots. It'll pull up. Very interesting story from a couple of years ago about the number of complaints lodged against the Patriots by various teams in the league. But start with that. Google it.
Well, what proof did you have?
I went on my gut for crying out loud. And so I think that they thumb their nose a lot at the league.
Where have they all...
Ask these same people whether they think Roger Clemens is guilty, and they all say yes. And my answer would be to Jay, based on what?
Based on what?
Based on what?
What?
What? Hearsay?
What?
Or your gut? Because at the end of the day, when you're really using common sense in your gut, or do you have hard evidence? You tell me.
No, but what I'm saying is, you and the media...
I just think that is such bullcrap. It's a matter of convenience, right? When it's a guy you like, you don't want it to be true. When it's a guy you don't like, you'll bury him just as quickly as you're saying we're burying Brady. And you know what? I don't hate the Patriots.
Based on what?
Go back and listen to the stuff from last season after the Chicago game, which is in week six or seven or whatever the hell it was. And I told you that it was. I felt better about that team than I felt about him in years.
Based on what?
Go to your Google machine. What do I base it on?
Hearsay?
Google it.
Or your gut?
What?
Yeah, they what? Yeah, they hear what they want to hear. You know, what can I tell you? That's pretty much what it comes down to. People hear what they want
to
hear.
Go to the Google machine, says the man who told us to stay off the internet.
So again, we've had a busy week here on Felger and Mazz. So thanks to Paul Perillo for filling in. In fact,
thanks for having me.
You're listening to Felger and Mazz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.